Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Overnight, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed a joint session of the US Congress in a speech overshadowed by multiple absences and some 2,000 protesters gathered outside. Mr. Netanyahu made efforts to praise both former President Trump and President Biden, whom he described as a proud Irish-American Zionist. While Mr. Netanyahu spoke extensively about the Israeli casualties on October the 7th, he made almost no mention of the thousands of Palestinians killed since Israel's assault on Gaza began. For more on this, I'm joined by Chief International Correspondent with the BBC, Lise Doucette. Good morning to you, Lise.
Good morning, Philip.
Big picture question here before we get into how this visit was received by whom. Are we actually in this conflict any closer to a ceasefire deal as a result of this visit, or is that not what it's about?
It is a question that keeps being asked time and again, a question which comes where time and again there are reports of progress, reports of deadlock. As Prime Minister Netanyahu was speaking to the US Congress, there were reports that he had held back his delegation from going to attend the talks until he got back. But we are hearing today that they, from senior U.S. officials, that they are in what they call the closing stages of a deal, that it is closable, and that they may be discussing those last difficult, most difficult details when the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu meets U.S. President Joe Biden today. But we have heard that kind of analysis before. So I think on all sides, and most of all, the long, long, desperately suffering people of Gaza, hoping against hope for a ceasefire, that they are only holding their breath until it actually happens.
Okay, so to the speech itself then, who was he speaking to? His American audience or a domestic audience back in Israel?
As always, both. It's often said that in the United States, policy towards Israel is not foreign policy. It is domestic policy. Prime Minister Netanyahu was invited in a bipartisan invitation, but it was noticeable that dozens of lawmakers from the Democratic Party, fierce critics of Prime Minister Netanyahu's engagement in the war in Gaza, and of these, the count was some 40 standing ovations, that most of those who stood up were Republicans. Prime Minister Netanyahu knows that to succeed in Israel, he has to not just succeed in Washington, but be seen to succeed in Washington. So he is hoping that this very high profile, it was his fourth time addressing the Congress, a huge privilege, that it will shore up his flagging support at home as the war in Gaza grinds on. It's almost approaching, in a few months, it will be 1 year. And there is night after night in Israel, the hostage families are protesting that he is not putting their lives first. That is a huge, huge sensitive issue. The emotions are still raw in Israel.
So many contradictory images emerging from this visit, Lise. On the one hand, you have, as you say, Netanyahu's rapturous greeting from the Republican side of the House, at least. And on the other hand, you have images of maggots that protesters claim that they released in the Watergate Hotel where he's staying. It seems more than ever that we're looking at a split-screen reality, two different versions of reality.
The war in Gaza has split not just the United States, it has split countries the world over. I'm sure our listeners have also seen it at home. It is very much, to use the expression, the war of our time. Prime Minister Netanyahu cast it as a battle for survival of the Jewish state. He made no mention of the what's now said to be very close to 40,000 Palestinians killed in nearly a year of war, not to mention, of course, those who are said to be on the brink of starvation and threatened now by infectious diseases, including the United Nations says the real risk of polio. Prime Minister Netanyahu cast this, of course, as that this was a proxy fight for Iran, and to his critics. And they gathered in the thousands right outside the assembly where he was speaking. He called them useful idiots for Iran. He's often said that those who protest against the war are basically on the side of Hamas, which, of course, is an exaggeration. But this is a hugely divisive issue with pain on both sides. As I mentioned, the hostage families are suffering beyond belief, that they know that as the war grinds on, more and more of their loved ones are dying in the Israeli war. Palestinian sufferings have reached unprecedented proportions. Every aid worker who goes to Gaza, aid workers with decades of experience, say they have never seen suffering like this. And of course, the war has also reached the world's highest courts, the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice as well.
When he uses phrases like the one that you just reported there, calling those who are querying Israel's actions Tehran's useful idiots, what do you think majority sentiment in Israel on that is? Do you think that there's a large number who would see such language as unwise?
For most of the war, and in particularly at the beginning, but for many months after, the opinion polls in Israel showed overwhelming support for Prime Minister, not for Prime Minister Netanyahu, whose popularity is at low levels, but for the Israeli Defense Forces and their battle against Hamas and Islamic Jihad, a war which, and in terms that Prime Minister Netanyahu has described as a battle to destroy Hamas, and the second priority said to bring the hostages home. But as the war has ground on, even members of Prime Minister Netanyahu's war cabinet, even extraordinarily members of the Israeli Defense Forces, are now saying that, quote unquote, destroying Hamas militarily is not possible. We have to find other ways of dealing with this. And the opinion polls are now showing that more and more Israelis believe that the fate of the hostages, and it's not clear how many are still alive, more than 250 were taken hostage on that day of savagery on October the 7th across southern Israel. They believe that that has to be the greater priority. So we know even the military is divided. There are families who support Prime Minister Netanyahu. Some of them went with him to Washington, although it was said that some took the invitation to be on his plane only because they thought it would be a chance to speak with him. So the cracks in Israel are ever wider. And it's noticeable that all this talk again of a ceasefire, and it would be a phased ceasefire. Prime Minister Netanyahu has repeatedly said the war won't end until Hamas is destroyed. But this idea that they could begin an exchange of the most vulnerable hostages for Palestinian prisoners comes at a time when the Knesset is about to go into recess. So this would remove the risk that if Prime Minister Netanyahu makes that move that President Biden and so many others are telling him to take, noticeably Prime Minister Netanyahu did not mention President Biden's call for a two-state solution as a more permanent solution, that if Prime Minister Netanyahu could possibly make a bold move when the Knesset was in recess, which would remove the risk of his far-right government ministers who are telling him not to end the war, of bringing down his government.
Can I ask you, Liz, finally, to speculate on the meetings now with Biden and with Kamala Harris? It strikes me that there's a major calculation change in a meeting with Joe Biden. He's freed from the need to appease the Jewish American lobby in any meeting, or are we, as you say, a little bit too close to the prospect of a ceasefire for Biden to do anything major here?
There's no doubting President Biden's loyalties. He's made it absolutely clear he is a committed Zionist, absolutely behind the state of Israel. But what he has also made clear is, for a very long time, that he has had and especially during this war, he has had major differences with Prime Minister Netanyahu, which is why he never invited Prime Minister Netanyahu to the White House. And he has toughened his language in public and then certainly in private. He is certain to reiterate to him today his belief that the only way to resolve this conflict once and for all is through a two-state solution. And that is now within its grasp, a two-state solution, an Israeli and Palestinian state side by side, alongside wider recognition of the Arab world, including Saudi Arabia. It's often been said that Prime Minister Netanyahu may be calculating that if only he can hold on long enough until after the U.S. elections, that if President Trump returns to the White House, that he may have an easier time. He may get a different kind of backing from President Trump, although President Trump can be unpredictable. There's also the factor that many are commenting now that Joe Biden may be considered a lame duck president. Prime Minister Netanyahu may believe that he doesn't really have to deal with Joe Biden because his time in office is now counted.
And then this meeting with Kamala Harris, who probably might be calculating that it suits her purposes to be closer to that younger, more pro-Palestinian wing of the Democrat Party than to Joe Biden's Zionist end of it.
There's been a lot of discussion about this, whether she will try to distance herself from President Biden's policy. But of course, she was his vice president. She is his vice president. She was very much part of the administration. She has been, though, more forceful in calling for an immediate ceasefire. There's a lot of talk about why she was absent yesterday in the House. It would be traditional that she would be there alongside the speaker. It was said that she had another commitment. Prime Minister Netanyahu, Israeli officials have not questioned that, but did she, or was it convenient that she wasn't there, so didn't have to be seen to be sitting behind him during that controversial address to Congress? These are now extremely sensitive political calculations. Kamala Harris has to think about Jewish voters, the Jewish lobby. She has to think about the huge upset in swing states among a demographic which played such a key role in bringing President Biden to power the first time. Young voters, African-American voters. So there's a lot at play here.
Lise Doucette, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. Coming up after the break, mystery solved. We know who found a Bronze Age treasure.
Text 51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.